A Secret Service agent's voice crackled through the phone. "Hello, General. I am calling to let you know that I have decided to go with John Bolton." Just like that, 13 months as National Security Advisor ended. But H.R. McMaster's story isn't another Trump-era tell-all filled with gossip and score-settling. Instead, it's something rarer. A thoughtful examination of what happens when a decorated military officer steps into the chaotic heart of a deeply divided administration. McMaster approached his role with the discipline of a soldier and the rigor of a historian, serving a president he neither worshipped nor despised. What emerges is a portrait of an America at war with itself, where the real battlefield wasn't overseas, but within the West Wing walls, and where the nation's deepest fractures played out in real time. Walking through Philadelphia's historic streets in February 2017, McMaster received an unexpected call from the White House. Michael Flynn had just resigned, and Trump needed a replacement. Friends warned him against accepting. The president was controversial, unpredictable, volatile. But McMaster remembered his mentor's words. "Some people hate Trump so much that they want him to fail. But he's the president of the United States. We can't afford for him to fail." Duty won out over doubt. At Mar-a-Lago, McMaster made a calculated pitch, discussing his Vietnam book about how Johnson's advisors catastrophically failed by telling him what he wanted to hear. When asked about golf, he replied bluntly that Air Force officers made better partners. Prompted by Bannon, he shared a Gulf War story, his cavalry troop destroying an entire Iraqi brigade. The kicker? A captured Iraqi commander was bewildered finding American soldiers carrying photos of Rommel in their tanks. Trump laughed and offered him the job immediately. Looking back, McMaster realized he'd missed a crucial warning sign. Trump never asked about his vision for the role. On day one, Deputy National Security Advisor K.T. McFarland warned McMaster that Washington would be nothing like your experience in the military and that friends stab you in the chest. She wasn't wrong. McMaster discovered Bannon had been added to the Principals Committee with a red Sharpie, a political operative inserted into national security decisions. Even more troubling, the Director of National Intelligence and Joint Chiefs Chairman had been removed. McMaster applied uncommon military leadership principles, visiting staff in their offices rather than summoning them. He retired each night to military lodging at Fort Myer, finding comfort in the Army community that remained his anchor. Trump was open to new ideas, but prone to changing his mind based on whoever spoke to him last. Like Lyndon Johnson, he harbored deep insecurities that left him vulnerable to media criticism and maintained a loose relationship with truth, once insisting his inauguration drew more people than Obama's despite clear evidence otherwise. His reality TV background shaped his management style. He deliberately pitted advisors against each other, telling McMaster and Bannon different stories about the same decisions. McMaster discovered Trump responded to direct, fact-based presentations. When Trump cited an unnamed military expert, claiming Taliban victory was inevitable because Afghans are the toughest fighters, McMaster countered that the Taliban weren't romantic warriors, but a ruthless terrorist organization funded by Gulf donors and narcotics, trained by Pakistan's intelligence service, and intertwined with Al-Qaeda. He showed Trump photos of Kabul from the 1970s during Taliban rule and in 2017, demonstrating how life had transformed. These concrete visuals proved more effective than abstract policy arguments. CIA Director Mike Pompeo warned him about Trump's tendency to undervalue alliances and draw moral equivalencies with authoritarian regimes. The president's daily brief sessions became exercises in competitive sycophancy, with advisors competing to affirm Trump's instincts were always right. In March 2017, McMaster discovered Bannon and Chief of Staff Reince Priebus had created a list of holdover NSC staff they planned to fire. He confronted Priebus. "What the fuck do you two think you're doing?" In an Oval Office meeting, McMaster pointed at Bannon and told Trump, "I want him out of it." Trump agreed. Relationships with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Secretary James Mattis proved equally fraught. Taylorson interpreted the traditional Scowcroft model as State Department primacy. McMaster visited General Brent Scowcroft himself, who emphasized, "You are not junior to the Secretary of Defense. Don't act like it." McMaster realized a troubling dynamic. Bannon viewed his efforts to give Trump options as constraining an alt-right agenda, while Mattis and Tillerson viewed those same efforts as enabling a dangerous president. Both secretaries prioritized departmental control over collaboration. Their fundamental lack of confidence in Trump severely hampered their collective ability to help him make consistent decisions. Despite internal chaos, McMaster developed coherent strategies. After North Korea's missile launches, he crafted a maximum pressure approach with Tillerson and Mattis, showing Trump how Pyongyang historically provoked, then extracted concessions. Three principles emerged: don't rush negotiations, don't separate diplomacy from military options, and don't lift sanctions prematurely. McMaster believed Kim wanted nuclear weapons not just for deterrence, but to reunify Korea under his control. When Assad used sarin gas at Khan Shaykhun, McMaster developed a response plan. Trump decided in a Mar-a-Lago men's room, "Let's do it." That evening, during dinner with Xi Jinping, McMaster passed Trump a note confirming 59 cruise missiles had launched. Trump informed Xi over chocolate cake. McMaster's most significant contribution was a national security strategy, shifting America toward global competition while demanding reciprocity. Its objectives: improving border security, accelerating defense innovation, modernizing nuclear deterrence, pursuing energy dominance, and protecting supply chains, proved prescient. McMaster led a fundamental shift in China policy from engagement to competition. At Davos, Trump challenged unfair practices, declaring America would no longer turn a blind eye to intellectual property theft. McMaster warned Trump that Xi's win-win rhetoric actually meant China won twice. By early 2018, McMaster's position had become precarious. After the Munich Security Conference, he described Russian election interference evidence as incontrovertible, a statement that infuriated Trump and likely sealed his fate. Trump couldn't separate acknowledging Russian interference from claims it affected election results. In his final days, McMaster focused on unfinished business, particularly Russia's nerve agent attack on Sergei Skripal. Despite Trump's skepticism, he approved closing the Russian consulate in Seattle and expelling 60 intelligence officials. On March 22, 2018, McMaster received the expected call, ending his tenure. The next day, he briefed Bolton on four priorities: North Korea, China, Russia, and Syria. He warned that Trump would make tough decisions when presented with good analysis, but would grow resentful of advisors who pushed him beyond his prejudices. On his final day, NSC and White House staff lined the West Wing path, clapping and calling farewells as McMaster and his daughter walked out. Past the cherry blossoms in full bloom, McMaster reflected on those who had fought alongside him to help America compete and build a better future. Trump emerged from America's deepening divisions rather than creating them. His administration implemented overdue policy corrections, recognizing China as a strategic competitor, taking firmer stances toward Russian aggression, developing sustainable counterterrorism strategies, and achieving the Abraham Accords. Yet his mercurial nature undermined these gains. Twitter reversals blindsided his own team, creating foreign policy turbulence. His character flaws culminated on January 6, 2021, when wounded ego led him to abandon constitutional responsibilities. America's internal divisions have compromised our capacity to address external challenges. This isn't about one administration. It's a mirror held up to a nation struggling to find common ground. Until we address these fractures, we remain our own greatest obstacle. The question isn't whether we can afford to fail, it's whether we can afford to keep fighting ourselves while the world moves on.